This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright and Brock Rahm.
You know, I think what I do is a lot of strategy, but it's, I'd love to learn just more of the analytics and how to grow in that cycle.
This week's conversation with Dan Gadd is all about digital content and transformation. How do you decide where to spend your time? How do you use metrics for decision-making? Why doesn't your content reach all of your followers? He's here with the insights to help you succeed.
All right, I went to time.is.
Oh, buddy, we're doing time.is. I forgot about this part already. Sorry.
And without Brock to count us down, too.
You want to go 55?
Sure.
All right, there's our sync point. Let's do this.
More on point than it had been, so.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Hey, what's going on? It's Justin. Just wanted to give a shout out to APM for providing the track for us here on the Creative Sports Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're finding us and aren't a member of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com.
Joining us today is Dan Gadd. He's the Senior Director of Digital Strategy for the Atlanta Falcons, but he was one of my first bosses. And he's been a great resource for me over the years relating to content, especially when it comes to strategy, when you're talking about audience, when you're looking at metrics. Dan is definitely really experienced in that area. He started with the Jacksonville Jaguars, went to the Chicago Bears, then he got outside of sports, but still was connected to sports through Taylor Strategy, and now has ended up back in the NFL with the Atlanta Falcons. And one of my favorite things to talk about with Dan is usually when he went to a team, that team had some success getting to the Super Bowl. Because when he joined Chicago in the middle of the season, they went to the Super Bowl. And when he joined Atlanta, they went to the Super Bowl. So he's a good luck charm. So all the way around. So welcome to the show, Dan.
I appreciate it, and I'm sort of a good luck charm. So every 10 years I get hired by a team in the middle or late part of a season, and we make Super Bowl run, but we end up losing. So obviously that Bears team, which was a funny one, because my last game in Jacksonville was we beat Peyton Manning and the Colts. And then, so I thought we'd finally gotten that curse behind me and go to Chicago. We play Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl, and we are the losers in Peyton Manning's first Super Bowl win. And then obviously 10 years later, I get hired by Atlanta. We lose to the Patriots in that epic game. So yeah, every 10 years, I get hired by a team and go to the game and lose.
I mean, I know this is a little off topic of what, you know, that point was, but what's that like getting hired in the middle of a season? Because that to me in itself seems pretty unique from a team perspective.
It is. So I thought it was crazy with the Bears. It was utter insanity with the Falcons when I got, but I do remember getting to the Bears, and I mean, I will keep this very short, but I mean, my first day with the Bears was crazy because they had a player named Tank Johnson, whose bodyguard had just shot somebody. And so literally the day that my first day on the job, my boss, who was our vice president of communications, was dealing with that. So basically I got put in a cubicle and said, hey, here's your cubicle and your laptop, go to work. And I didn't know how to log in. I didn't even know how to get into our CMS of the website or anything. I just kind of sat and had to, you know, find IT and figure that out. But 10 years later, Atlanta had kind of identified that they wanted to go through a digital transformation, and I jumped in, and it was a little more complicated because it was, you know, we also had the stadium as well. So there wasn't just a football team, but we were trying to hire like, I think it was like six or seven people. When I came in, there was a whole bunch of open jobs, and you're trying to like get an organization to think the right way about content. And really, I mean, we had to do a complete 180 there, because there was some goofy things about the way that content, what the origins of where content was coming from, was not great. So it was utter chaos, but it was probably some of the most fun too in the run to the Super Bowl, because we had a growing team that really bonded in a cool way during, you know, trial by fire, and just produced some unbelievable work during that time, and really saw a lot of creativity come to the forefront from a group that really was kind of finding their chemistry and camaraderie with each other at the same time. And it was it was an awesome, awesome, awesome experience. And there's a ton of memories from that run to the Super Bowl that I'll never.
So you touched a little bit on the website in Chicago. I think covering your background here might help frame things for people to understand. Because when you started in Jacksonville, you were on the video production side. And when you went to Chicago, it was a promotion to lead the digital website. And then you really started to get into social as well. So can you give us a little bit more of a background on how you've had different touch points over the course of your career?
100%. I will start and I'll give credit. There was a dean at my college in our freshman orientation who said, and she ended up being almost being Nostradamus on this a little bit. The one thing I remember her telling us during our freshman orientation was that we're not at this school, we're not going to teach you how to do a job. We're going to teach you how to think so that when advantages come along, you will know how to take advantage of them. And she told us your jobs, your careers will likely change over the course of your lifetime. And you need to be ready to take advantage of those opportunities. And I didn't see that as clearly as she did until, and to your point, Justin, I started in Jacksonville. I was originally their broadcast intern, turned that into a full-time job, really becoming, you know, producing video for the website at a time when that was really in its infancy. And so really I was a shooter editor for years, but the blessing in that was that at the time we had a very, very small team internally that did everything on the website. So everything from, you know, we had one writer, we had a webmaster and a graphic designer and me, and that was the entire team. And so, you know, everything that was produced for that site or built was by that group of four people. And so the guy that was the head of that, a guy named Steve Hall, really started teaching me how to do graphic design. He taught me, he's actually the one that taught me nonlinear editing at the time. And then he taught me, you know, basically a little bit of web, HTML, CSS, web design, all of those things, Flash at the time, but then also pulling analytics and being able to evaluate what was working and what wasn't. So it was very, it was much, much bigger than just a video producer for the website. I ended up having to do a little bit of everything. And one of the things I found out is I got pretty good at being able to go through the numbers and start to explain. I had no background in it, but I just had a kind of a natural curiosity, I think largely from being a kid and growing up and you know, reading stats on baseball players and football teams. But anytime I was able to start translating, hey, here are the things that are working on our site and here are the things that are not working and here's why I think these things are. And I got to be pretty good at explaining those things. And really after 4 or 5 years there, was in a position where I was comfortable to start feeling, you know, for applying for these kind of, there was these website manager positions at the time that were kind of like the infancy of digital directors. Because at that time it was mostly web and email. So I applied for a job as website manager of the Bears and got that thing. And within a couple of years, social media was exploding. And so literally, I mean, it was at that time, I was literally just goofing around in the office and launched our Facebook and Twitter account and took the, and that, I think that's where things really exploded because, you know, like I said, I was always very analytically inclined. I love the content game, but I loved seeing what worked and what didn't and trying to figure out why that was and why people were interested in one thing and not in another thing and really putting a lot of time against that. And when social media came around, I think this was a foundational moment in my career. So this was like 2000, we launched, I think in 2008 and immediately, I think probably like a lot of content producers at the time, we thought, okay, we're going to look like heroes. Cause we're going to, you know, on day one with the Bears, we had 250,000, they rolled a bunch of fake imposter accounts into our account. So we had 250,000 followers on the first day we were on Facebook. We were actually number one in the league for audience for a couple months there. And we started putting links out on Facebook thinking, you know, 250,000 people, we're going to drive 20% increases in article views and video views. And we're going to look like heroes because we're going to have all this web traffic. And a funny thing happened. The most popular content on our website didn't do anything on Facebook. And so we're like, all right, what's going on here? And a couple of us started building out these Excel sheets. And we built out at the time 6 content buckets. And we started testing things on Facebook to see what worked. And it was all of the stuff on the website that was not that popular on the website that was crushing on Facebook. It was things like just putting a team logo out there at the time, putting out like these desktop wallpapers, all this stuff. But as we started to really evaluate why that was, we just came to the conclusion, okay, this is a very different audience than the people that are coming to our website on a daily basis. And this is not This is not the people who want to see what the injury report is. This is not the people who want to know what happened on the depth chart or what happened to practice today or what we're going to do going into this game. These people just want something to show off that they are a fan of the team. They don't want to have all the knowledge. If we just give them something to celebrate the fact that they're a fan of the team, great. So we started to realize this is a much more casual audience. We put some, demographics behind that and all that. But really at the end of the day, we kind of came to the conclusion, hey, those objectives that we had about driving more web traffic was minuscule compared to the potential we do have here, because this group of people are not coming to the stadium on a typical game day. They're probably not watching more than a couple of games a year. They're not coming to our website. They're probably not in our email database, and they're not coming to our events. We don't really have contact with this group of people, this massive army of people who are Bears fans, but very casual and don't connect with us very often. So the thought became, okay, if we can figure out who these people are, what makes them think, and if we can get them to start to not just think about us, on Sundays in the fall, but to think about us on a Monday, to think about us on a Tuesday, to think about us on a Wednesday, we have a chance to do something much more powerful than any set of objectives that we put at the beginning of this process could have led us to. We can strengthen our fan base. And so that became the goal. And at the time, Facebook had a metric called people talking about this. And we decided we're going to be number one in the league at that metric, no matter what, because we're going to get people, we're going to, really start to try and figure this thing out, see how to get these people thinking about us more often. And so just we dominated that metric because we were very focused on putting things out that made people react to our content. And over time, I ended up going to Taylor. And, I'd put all that time in about 10 years of work in the NFL or 11 years and all that time into thinking about what makes people move, what makes people think, what makes people react on social, and how do you build good content around those insights. And I went to an agency. And that was a completely different world. And I would recommend for anybody that, loves sports but wants to see the broader marketing industry for a while, the agency experience and having to communicate with clients was really, really eye-opening. And I worked with a ton of just unbelievably intelligent people and learned a lot there. But the communication of all the things that I had in the back of my head that I knew worked, now having to explain it to a corporation. Like this, you're not working in social because you're not doing things that are interesting to people. That's like that core message, and having to build out decks and communication strategies to get people to understand how central insights have to be to what you do became more like, that's where I started like, oh, businesses are going to have to transform if they're ever going to get good at this space. And so I put a ton of work against that for 5 years at Taylor. And then I did not think I was going to get back into the NFL. Until I actually began consulting with the Falcons. They were starting this early digital transformation. And I went in there I led a sports team at Taylor, sports digital team. And we went in and started kind of evaluating the scene and the way that they were talking. So Morgan Shaw Parker, who was my boss coming from Nike, Brett Jukes was coming from NASCAR, and the CEO, Steve Cannon, was coming from Mercedes. The way that they were talking about how good they wanted to be at digital and how they wanted to transform what was happening there. I thought, okay, I didn't think I was ever going to get back in the NFL because I didn't know if the league was ever going to be progressive enough in this space to really, really, be able to have big ideas and do bold things. And the way that leadership group was talking about the space, I was like, okay, somebody's going to have a chance to go in here and really, really do this thing the right way and build content, become literally best in class at content production. And so that kind of really perked my interest a little bit, or piqued my interest, and so I threw my name in the hat, and here I am in Atlanta. And it's been a crazy fun ride, very, very challenging work, which is great. Trying to figure out how to get an organization to think about content in the right way and value it for the potential it has to impact people has been a incredibly challenging but incredibly fun and exciting experience. And I lead a team of people that. I could not be working with better people. And my team is the way that they think and treat other people in the organization, and their level of care is so high. And that's on top of just being unbelievably skilled at what they do and unbelievably creative. So it's been a challenge, but it's been a very, very rewarding and exciting experience.
Well, and you talked quite a bit there about, you know, analytics and the role of that as you started to build out what you were doing at the Bears. And to me, that's something that I think is really interesting. That idea that, you know, you got to have different buckets of content. You got to have, you know, what works on one platform doesn't work on another platform, and trying to turn the casual fan into, you know, someone who's buying tickets, someone who's, you know, buying merchandise, that kind of thing. Analytically, how are you measuring, you know, that brand affinity turning into revenue? Where do you start to see that ROI, and how do you measure that, you know, the Facebook engagement versus whether that's actually turning into money or not?
So let me start and say, I have just an unbelievable passion, and I believe greatly in the power of great content. Great content, especially today, as people are looking at their phones nonstop, it has moved beyond just an entertainment thing to something that shapes the perception and is a filter into the rest of the world, right? I mean, the way that people view the world literally is shaped by what's in their phones. And the biggest thing is that I try to get everybody to understand is, like, you can't look at the number of followers on our account. So we have about, I think it's 2.3 million followers on Twitter. And early on, I heard things like, hey, can you just put this, we just need to get this in front of our 2.3 million followers. And it's unbelievable how challenging, and this is every business, right? I think every business has struggles with this, is the notion that of how competitive the content landscape is, and whether it's the algorithms or the shelf life or whatever on each of these platforms, there are different triggers on whether or not your content gets seen. So getting everybody to understand that, like, we have to be great at this. It is competitive. Every post is competing against the thousands of other things in those feeds, and we have to be great to even be seen. And that's the mindset that we've got to take into this stuff. And so the unbelievable thing about our space, right, is the ceiling and the floor, which is something I have to feel like I have to communicate to any brand I ever talk to any, you know, any group, is always like, you may get 18,000 people to see this. You might get 5 million to see it. And the gap is dependent on how much of a reaction you generated with the first people that saw that. And so we have to, if you're not putting insights and analytics and really, really diving deep to understand the emotional and informational triggers that people have, you almost have zero shot to be consistently good in this space. And that's not just a content team thing. Organizationally, I think if people are looking at digital platforms as the way as an important part of their business, that, and I've talked to Justin about, I've said this exact phrase to Justin, you can't say, and it was actually on one of your podcasts that made me say this to him. One of your guests from the Sharks said, everybody wants to be digital first. And the thing that kind of sparked my mind on that was, yeah, everybody wants to be digital first, but nobody knows what it means to be digital first. Digital first does not mean doing everything that you already do and putting it on digital. It means knowing what works in that space so that you can be seen, or shape the way that people feel about your brand. And that's an incredibly challenging thing. So, you know, to answer your question about analytics, for that reason, you know, our core analytics are built, our KPIs, it's as simple as looking at everything on a per post basis. We want to break it down. We're not looking at aggregate numbers of views or aggregate numbers of interactions. We really start with, on a per post basis on each platform, are we generating our biggest KPI on Twitter, and this is going to sound silly, but it's true, is retweets per tweet. Are, when we put something out, are we causing enough of a reaction for our content to get seen? And then we'll base everything else, and then we have a whole bunch of other stuff that we'll look at then, and to make sure that, like, it's being received the right way, that we're getting the right referrals into our website, all that stuff. But it's the same thing. There's a lot of platforms where we're looking at views per video or completion rate. Did people hang in there long enough? But it's always on a per post basis, because we're not trying to put out 45 things in a day. Our ultimate goal is to shape the way people think about the Atlanta Falcons. And we need to see metrics that are telling us that when we post content, people are reacting to it and they're noticing it. And so it really starts there. We are getting more and more into the longer form stuff, and we're adjusting some of our metrics to go along with that. So again, completion rate, watch time, that kind of stuff we're looking at. We do want to generate a huge number of video views over the course of a year, but we want to do it because we were at the top of the league in terms of views per video and those types of things, and that allow us to see that, to answer that question, when we put out content, are people paying attention to it? Are we registering with them? And so we our main KPIs are kind of centered around that, with obviously a ton. I mean, we've got 50 tabs of data from our season recap, so there's a lot more that goes into it. But it really does. It starts with interaction rates, views per video, that kind of stuff that allows us to see if we level the playing field between us and the Dallas Cowboys, who have 8 million followers. How is our content performing on a post by post basis? We know that if they put out 42 things in a day with to 8 million followers, they're going to rack up more interactions than us over the course of a year. But on a post by post basis, are we reaching the same percentage or higher of our audience? And that allows us to then evaluate how are we stacking up when we put things out.
You talked a little bit about the psychology, and I think that can span video production, you know, whether you get into coloring or things that I've seen you do locally in the community with the, you know, with firefighters, where you're sending players to say, hey, thank you for the work that you're doing, or you know, you're trying to shift the way that you're writing a story so it's more personable to the fans. Can you talk a little bit about the content decisions that you've made and making the shift in the content to make it more engaging?
Yeah, 1,000%. So when I came back into the NFL, let me put it this way. When I came back into the NFL, I was really thinking about like, what would I do differently now? We had a much larger team here than I had with the Bears, which is great. And super, super talented group. And I was, you know, as we're kind of going on the process, there were a couple of things. I'm like, how now with a fresh start, how would I do this differently? And I started with a sense of purpose. So the first thing I wrote on my board was develop the most passionate, excited, and informed fan base. And wanted everybody on our team I wanted a common purpose that everybody in the team would get behind and would buy into. And it's as simple as that. Just like, and let them know, like, we're going to make our decisions based on this common purpose. This is going to be the thing. This is going to be the filter on how we hire people. This is going to be the filter on where we spend our time. This is going to be the filter on the types of projects we want to take on, all of that stuff. We want to do things that develop a stronger fan base for our team and that people rally around. So that was step one. We also implemented this process called, or this, these four factors that we call the factors of finding the why, which is our, as content producers, I want everybody to be thinking about as they're producing content. So one of the things that I talk a lot about with the team is, you're not just a video editor. You're not just a shooter. You're not just a writer. You're not just a graphic designer. Your job is a content producer, which means you are responsible for how this content performs when it goes out to the audiences it's intended for. And I want everybody on the team to be paying attention to the series and the work that they're doing and whether or not it is being received by the audiences the right way, because it can't just be a couple of people looking at the numbers. Everybody on the team needs to be aware of, are the things that I'm working on working with our audiences? And so we our entire team does stats recapping. Our entire team is involved in, we do these quarterly sit downs where we go through every series on our table or on our books and be like, is it working? Is it not working? If it's not, we either have to fix it or get it off the books and do something else. And so those kinds of things, Justin is where I really try to get our team grounded, and they bought it. And my team, I cannot speak more highly of the group of people that I work with. But that is, if we were going to make an impact, it was going to take the entire team really kind of having that mindset of, we're going to do things and we're going to spend our time on the things that impact our fan base. And that is going to make the whole organization better, right? If we have more people interested in the team, we're going to be able to sell more tickets. If our content is reaching more people, it should make it more valuable from a sponsorship standpoint. But to your point on the content decisions, as we went through all these analytics exercises, we got sharper and sharper and sharper on talking about the type of work that we wanted to do. And so we ended up with, on the video and social side, we ended up with 5 content buckets. And you noticed one of the buckets was human moments. So that's probably the most undefeated, you know, category of content that there is, right? So most of our best pieces are in that content bucket, or at least have hit that in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, a lot of people noticed the Hayden Hurst video that we put out where he talked about his story with mental illness. And that one, our team, we had a clip, a mic'd up clip with him that went super big, where he just talked to Dak about their foundations. We had a mic'd up after a game. And our team said, hey, they recognize that. They came back and said, there's a bigger story here. And they worked their tails off to build a relationship with Hayden, to get him comfortable telling that story. But they knew, again, like, that is one of the things that is a foundational element of us now. So we have those 5 content buckets. But Foster the Rivalry is another one. We had to really get our organization on board with understanding that, like, our fans want to know that this organization wants to kill the Saints. And we've got to have some fun with that. So we do. We play into foster the rivalry as one of our five content buckets as well. And every one of those content buckets, though, came out of yearly planning exercises where we were like, where do we need to get sharper? Where do we need to spend more of our time? And it really kind of turned into, I think in year three, we had these kind of five content areas, and we really turned them into those five content buckets and said, this is where we need to be spending our time.
But how do you, that's interesting to hear that foster the rivalry bucket, because I love that. But I think this is just me talking kind of as, you know, a fan and someone who understands the space, but doesn't do, you know, that day-to-day, you know, straight digital work. How do you walk that line of, you know, kind of having that snark and having fun and not going too far? I feel like snark Twitter, you know, kind of with the Kings and Wendy's and all that stuff was like big, you know, maybe 5 years ago. And now everyone's trying to do it. And a lot of people just, frankly, in my opinion, do it pretty poorly. How do you walk that fine line? How do you know when, you know, when to have fun with it and when you need to dial it back a little bit?
When it becomes mean-spirited. I think when that's, you know, as a matter of fact, I was just talking to Austin Hiddle, our lead video guy, about this, because we've got another project coming up, and we had to kind of brief a partner in on this. He actually was the first one to the punch, was like, listen, we're not going to do anything where we demean the skills of another player in the league. And so we try not to make it too personal, and let, you know, and we do put those boundaries up where it's like, if this is mean-spirited, then we're doing this wrong. But we also wanted to establish, and this is, I think, where my agency background came into play. We had to get the organization to, this was a broad about a two or three year process. Because when I first got to Atlanta, there was this thing in the NFL, this wasn't just our team, this was across the league, that there was this sense that the other teams were our business partners and we didn't want to poke fun of them. And it was like, that's not the way our fans see it. We can't ever let our fans know that. Our fans want us to destroy the Saints and they want us to stomp on the Carolina Panthers. So we had to kind of really get everybody comfortable with it. And one of the things that we had a presentation that went to the higher realms of the organization. And one of the things that we put in there was a slide that said, digital content is entertainment, not an official team statement. And we needed everybody to start to kind of have that perspective that, like, just because we poke fun at the Saints, this isn't an official team statement that, you know, our owners and football's team don't like, that, you know, are not going to be nice to the Saints. This is entertainment.
I love that. I love that.
And we really wanted to start to break away from this notion that everything that we put out on our Twitter account is like press release type material, that this is the way that the team feels. Like, we had to break that feeling and get everybody to understand, like, this is entertainment for our fans. And if we're going to be good in the space, we have to view it as that.
Oh, that is so good. I really do. I think that's such a good way to think of it. And I don't know that I've ever heard anyone put it that way. That's such a succinct way to understand the difference. And to your point, I think it kind of comes from that idea back when it all started of, you know, everyone just putting out press releases on there and, you know, hey, we released our schedule. Here's a link to our website. And it never really, you know, it took a long time for that to evolve where people really understood this more as entertainment than information. And you explaining it that way is the best I've ever heard it explained. So that's awesome. Thank you.
You mentioned that Austin was talking, your videographer was talking to a partner. And whenever I get asked what the biggest difference is between professional sports and college sports, it's the co-branded nature of creating content. Can you talk a little bit about that partnership and how the end goal is to create content that can be sold most of the, you know, 90% of the time? And obviously you also are trying to entertain people and you want to keep it on brand. Can you talk a little bit about how you approach that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's as simple as, like, you know, identifying when we need help, you know, when we've got a big idea that needs to come to life and it all starts with our group coming up with the right ideas that we feel are strategically in the right direction. And there are certain points where we just have to realize, like, look, for this to come to light in the best possible way, shape, and form, we got to bring somebody in that has either the bandwidth or the resources to do something in a light that we can't currently do. And to your point, Justin, that discussion a lot of times does become more around, like, all right, is there a revenue play on this thing? And what is, you know, how is the budgeting on this going to work? Is it part of our, you know, yearly operating budget, or is this part of, you know, something that's tied to sponsorship dollars to help produce the stuff so that we can put a partner on this thing in a big room. And so it really isn't like for our group, I think it's just a sense of excitement because like, hey, this is an opportunity to bring a life to bring an idea to life that we are really supportive of and we think is going to be huge in the space. Let's make sure that we find the right people. But then I'd throw in we do have a base of regular freelancers too that are almost act as extensions of our team in a lot of realms. And everything from shooting game day to shooting a lot of the CR events that you mentioned, Justin, to doing, you know, we'll do special shoots down at the stadium. And there are times when we need, you know, we've basically got 5 full-time people on our video team. And there are times when like either the combination of the other things we have on our plate or the size of the production, we're going to have to hire people on. And so I think one of the things that Austin has done a great job of is building great relationships with very talented people that we know that we can tap into quickly and not have to spend, you know, a ton of time briefing them and getting them up to speed on things because, you know, Austin is extremely, extremely detailed in his briefing. We've got just unbelievable creative firepower and people that can help coach like Chris Wink on our team. They can get those people up to speed but because they're partners with us, it doesn't take a lot of time. So they almost act as an extension of our team in a lot of ways.
I think, you know, hearing you describe your team like that, it really feels like, you know, you've brought this agency mentality, you know, with you to the Falcons. And I do think that's, you know, something you're seeing a little bit more within the team space is the idea that you're your own content agency and that's how you have to view it. How much has that changed from, you know, when you first got into this with the Bears to where you're at with the Falcons now, just even the mindset you have to have within a digital space and within a team, you know, digital economy?
So there are elements that I brought from the agency, right? Like you know, it kind of goes back to the tri-glass discussion that you guys had on a previous podcast. Like when the opportunity is right to partner with somebody like that to raise the work, you know, realizing that the work that we do is valuable and that it's worth investing in and bringing our partners to do it, we will do it in the right circumstances. But I would say, honestly, Garrett, in a lot of ways, it's not so much an agency mindset. We're really trying to transition and have more of a media company mindset of we want to produce a lot of really great content on a daily basis that can win in this space. And that's, you know, there's the comparison we make internally a lot is like, are you a media company like a Bleacher Report or a CBS, or are you a creative agency? And those are two completely different business models because, you know, on the media side, you have a content strategy. You've got a team of very talented people who know how to execute against that strategy, and they're churning out work. On the agency side, right, it's more about you're getting briefed in by a client, and you're building a service department around those clients. And it's about approvals and it's about brainstorming based on a brief that you get. We're trying to move more towards, we're going to set up a strategy, a content strategy of things that we think are going to win more people over and make them bigger fans of our team. And then we're going to train a group of people to go out and get as much of the stuff out. Now we will learn from the agency side and say, hey, we need help on these big ideas. Let's not be afraid to go out and get the right people to come in and help us with that. But part of it is like, again, like one of the things that we've really tried to push internally is the mindset of how valuable the content is. And so one of the things that we say is the content is the product, right? Normally a lot of teams or organizations across the industry usually will, what they call content is usually meant to promote a product. And what we're trying to get to understand is the content is our product. We've got to treat the content as if it is the thing, and we've got to build it for the sake that it is going to be great, great content that wins our fans over. And that is where we need to put all of our time and energy into making sure that the content itself is great. But if you do that, we know that we can use that content to sell tickets because it gets people excited. We can use that content to put sponsors on it because it's going to reach a lot of people and it's going to be more valuable. We can use that content if we get the right human stories working with our CR team. We can build great content that showcases their efforts and what this organization stands for from a core value standpoint. So we want to have one content strategy with big ideas and things that win people over, and then leverage that content to suit the needs of the organization instead of getting 47 briefs in about, we need something here, we need something here, we need something here, and all the content being aimed at promoting something. We want content that's going to win people over, and then we'll use that content to showcase our organization and what we're doing.
Well, and how do you get that trust from those above you? You know, as the director of digital strategy, you know, how do you go about making sure that, you know, to your point, you're not just servicing, you know, a client. They're not telling you from above, you know, you have to do this, this, this. How do you earn that trust for your department to be able to go out and come up with the ideas and execute without having to go through, you know, 10 layers of approval or someone telling you what to do as a department?
We don't have it all figured out. It's still a work in progress, but I, you know, it really takes a lot of time and communication and building relationships and what you said, trust, right? And that's, so like where we've got with our CR team, and I think this was aided a lot, Chris Millman heads up our CR efforts, and he, I actually worked with him in Jacksonville. So we had a bit of a relationship coming in, and he's probably one of the most positive, high energy people I've ever been around. And he's just phenomenal to work with, but it took a couple of years to get to the point where we really understood. For us, we know their pillars, and we know what on the CR side, what it is that they need to have communicated from their group. And he also knows, you know, when we come in, like so when we're coming into a meeting, that first thing we're going to be looking for is, where are those human stories? Where are those things that can actually translate into great digital content so that we can showcase the efforts? And so it's just a lot of that. And I've got a great team around me too, a partnership person in Morgan Weeks. We've got Greg Urbano on the UI UX side, we've got a lot of people that have a lot of meetings and a lot of connections into the other groups in our organization. And it just takes a lot of time. Eric Hansen does a great job of this, of really sitting down and understanding the needs of those groups. And really, honestly, it's about showcasing. Like, I think one of the big misnomers in the digital, it's showcasing that we can be successful for them without putting everything out on Twitter. And it really comes down to like getting an organizational understanding that digital really means putting relevant things in front of relevant audiences. And so as easy as it is to say, hey, can you put this out on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook or whatever? Hey, what your activation is, or who you're trying to reach, are this group. And we can do this by pulling. We've got a lot of other digital products that we can use to get in front of those audiences, but we got to be smart about how we put the right thing in front of those groups without having every single thing go out right there. Because the knee-jerk reaction is, let's put everything out of Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And that's, there are a lot of ways for us to help people succeed, but it really starts by, let's go through the right processes of understanding, you know, who we're trying to reach, what their interests are, and where that connection is to what you're doing here. And then we'll find the right solution. And it takes a team of people really on the same page and having a system in place to help show everybody we can find success for your initiative or your activation, but it's going to take a little work to get to the right exact thing to reach the right people.
How do you get to a point where, if there are people that are putting things on, you know, creating one piece of content to distribute, probably because of resource limitations, maybe, what can you say to help them understand how to approach higher ups to be able to invest a little bit more or figure out a way to create content in specific, you know, directions?
Are you talking about like organizations with smaller content creation?
I'm even thinking like college teams also have like 26 different sports, and they're creating one piece of content, and, you know, maybe an Olympic sport that has one person assigned to it, and they also have a couple different sports. So, you know, if they're producing one piece of content, does it, you know, it's hard not to put it everywhere, but how would you think about that?
So I've started using the phrase ROTI, Roti, return on time investment. And I think that's what you're ultimately like, right? I think any of our most important commodity is, you know, besides you have all the equipment and all the physical resources or machine resources, but then it's our time, right? That is most responsible for the results that we get and how we apply that time. And I think it comes down to a lot of data, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying, Justin. I think one of the things that I think, and this is odd, but this sounds so simple. It is the hardest thing to get entire organizations to understand consistently and regularly. And it's what I mentioned earlier about the difference between the ceiling and the floor. And I think there is this notion that, and I've heard the phrase in the past, is this a business play or is this an engagement play? And getting everybody to understand that, like, in this space, it better be an engagement play or there is no business play. Like, the difference between, like, you're not going to reach anybody if this content isn't interesting to people. And that's a hard notion for, you know, and it's easy, right? Because you can be in meetings all day long and you know, you hear our top priority is now X thing over here. And everybody runs out of there and tries to find that X thing over there. The digital space, you know, our audience, it doesn't matter what our priority is if nobody reacts to the content in the digital space, right? There are things that you can do.
You mean your 2.3 million followers?
Exactly. We have posts that reached 18,000 of them and they didn't even notice that they got reached because they scrolled right by it. So somehow that has to get communicated. And I think a lot of times it's, you know, it really starts with, and I just had a conversation with a young social person about this not long ago. If you don't have save your content strategy, if you don't have the ability to make the decisions on where your time is, then you need to put your time against the analytics and start showing people and start teaching people that as much as we want this to be our priority, if we don't have a means of making this significantly interesting to people, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, if on no channel we can make this really, if there's not an audience for this, then we're wasting our time on the digital side on this. And we need to start thinking about, you know, at that point, you've got to be thinking about like what are called forced exposure areas, like pre-roll. Like I have to watch this in order to get to something else. A TV commercial. I have to watch this in order to keep watching the show. Billboards, banner ads, things that you basically have to see because in order to stay in that space, you have to see them. That's if there's not a true content play, and I think this is the difference. You know, we talk a lot about the difference between content producers versus advertisers. Content producers are building something with an audience in mind. Advertisers are building something with a message in mind. And if you're not thinking audience first, you're not going to be seen in this space. And somehow you've got to be able to communicate that. And usually data is the best way. So one of the very first things that we wrote on the very first deck when we started our digital transformation was the notion of there is no reach without reaction. And we put that on 5 slides, no reach without reaction. And we showed the difference between our high performing content and how many people that reached and our low performing content. And we literally showed slides of past examples where there were literally posts that were coming out of our channels that reached 0.1% of the audience. 0.1%. And it was because nobody reacted to them. And the longer term, and I think this is important, and this is probably where I should have started. There is a long-term detrimental harm to your channels if you're constantly not engaging people, right? Facebook deems you as a non-engaging platform. People don't follow you. Your growth rates fall off a cliff if you're not putting things out that make people want to follow you. And so for these sports leagues, same thing with Instagram. Instagram has an algorithm, but it also growth rate is tied to how good your content is. You can go platform by platform by platform and show that, you know, when you consistently put out uninteresting content, you're damaging yourselves. And I think, you know, the NFL, I'll give them credit. They came out with a presentation recently and I commend them for this. They talked about the long-term damage that you're doing to your platforms and to your reach in the digital space when you're not valuing great content in these spaces. And for leagues, right? Most major sports leagues, their number one source of revenue is from broadcasting media rights deals, right? It's a little bit odd that on the team side, that it's tough for them to view it as important to protect the long-term value of these properties by making sure that we're growing them and that we're building them and that we're eventually making them more and more valuable from a sponsorship revenue standpoint by putting out things that actually reach people. And that is, I think, one of the big conversations is there is long term. If you can get organized, if you can, it starts as a data conversation. And I think tying reach to reactions and showing that there isn't a business conversation versus an engagement conversation. you have to drive engagement. It is a fundamental, essential element of social content if you're going to drive business results. And even on the paid side, right, that people try to skip out of this and go, well, we'll just put paid behind it. Here's the trick. In the paid social space, your content still does not perform well. There's no escaping this. If you're putting paid behind content that people aren't interested in, your CPM goes up. If you're, Facebook used to have a thing called a relevance score, and it would go 1 through 10. We were able to show that, like, when we put money behind things that were 9s and 10s, our CPM was a lot cheaper, which means the content got in front of a lot more people.
Yeah, CPM, cost per million for people.
Exactly.
Million views, right?
Yep. And our cost per views went incredibly low when we were putting our money behind things that were a 9 or a 10 relevance score. So we were able to drive a ton more video views with content. And it makes sense, right? Those platforms don't want you putting content in front of people that isn't relevant, even if it's paid. So they're going to charge you a lot higher if people aren't reacting to that content. So even from a paid standpoint, your results aren't as good. And we're in the position, like a lot of times, we have to sell tickets. When we put money behind our best content as a lead gen driver, we get much better results than if we put it behind something that is just explicitly a call to action and a message to buy tickets. It's simple. Like there is no escape in the social space from producing good content. It does not work if you're producing bad things and trying to, whether it's organic, whether it's paid, it's not two separate conversations. In the social space, your content has to be good. It has to be relevant to people. It has to drive engagements or the results suffer.
It's just so interesting to me that the way that some of that content just still grabs people, like no matter how low quality it is, low effort, like retweet if your team is still in the NCAA tournament and that shit still works. Yeah. It's the dumbest thing in the world and I cannot believe it. Like as someone in the space, I just like roll my eyes at that. And then I look at the number of retweets and I'm just like, okay, I can't even be mad because you're doing what you came to do. I'm sure the content creator hated doing that too, but they know the numbers it's going to do.
And that's where I think you got to translate, data into insight. So if you're just translating data, you just become a copycat, right? Like if you're just looking at data and going, this works, and that's all you're doing, then you're just copycatting.
I start calling that stuff one-to-one content now. Everybody in the organization knows that anytime I say one-to-one content, they go, yeah. I'm like, no, we shouldn't be just copying people. That doesn't, just because you want to copy something that someone else had success with doesn't mean it's going to have success for us.
That's where you got to get to where the informational or the emotional trigger is. Okay, there is a sense of team pride that my team is still in it. No brainer, right? Okay, but that's a feeling. That's what translating data into insights is. You can translate why that worked into, if you translate this thing worked into why it worked, then you can start a brainstorm and say, all right, these teams are still alive in the tournament. How do we let these fans show off their sense of team pride in a cool way? That's the magic right there, is when you can translate, if you can get it, the insight isn't what worked. The insight is why it works. And it's not some complicated, ridiculous process. It's just like being able to put it into sentences that allow our content team to rephrase it in this is the emotional driver of why these moments are going to win. And then let's have a brainstorm about how do we hit on that emotion the hardest. But most people aren't doing that. Most people are going right to, we need to communicate that Blinky Twirly Day is coming up. How are we going to do that? And by the way, Justin, Blinky Twirly came from our days with the Bears when everybody wanted to do those stupid blinking twirly banners on the website. And I kept telling everybody, we're not putting any blinky twirly shit on our website.
You brought up something there that I think is also interesting. When you're going to social channels, that's a lot of younger demographics, especially when you're getting into Instagram, Snapchat, and different platforms, right? Your ticket sales, you're trying to sell to a little bit of an older demographic who can afford to buy those season tickets. How do you find that mixture of making sure that you can deliver engagement on your content to the younger demographic, but also use that to sell to the older demographic, and maybe it's platform related?
Yeah, great question. So Facebook, right, is not the platform it used to be in terms of like video views and engagements, all that stuff. And we're definitely growing exponentially faster on TikTok and IG. So there is our, you know, when we're brainstorming, typically our target is usually 18 to 24, because that's where we have the best chance to succeed, drive engagement, drive growth, and ultimately shape perception of the team. But to your point, Justin, like we do need to sell PSLs, and that's, you're right, it's an older audience. So we're not looking at Facebook as our main video or content driver as much as we used to, but there is a really cool tool in Facebook that allows you to look at what content pieces overperformed with which age and gender groups. And so at the end of every year, we will take the top 50 or 60 videos, and we will look at which videos overperformed with each age and gender group. And there is a very distinct difference in the types of videos in which you would expect. And so we'll take those learnings, and then we know then, and we do a very real time paid social effort on ticket sales. And so as our team is loading videos into Facebook, I'm kind of sitting behind the dashboard, and I'm looking at what inventory is coming in, what's coming in from a video standpoint. And I'm throwing a lot of them into these lead gen campaigns, but I'm also aware of like, okay, the ones that I think are going to work best with the ticket buying audience are these ones, these subset. And I'll put them in. Now I'll throw a lot of them in there though, just in case something surprises me. But then we really just let Facebook optimize the cost per lead and the cost per view on that stuff going to those audiences, so that we're able to generate the best results. But it is through an informed kind of process of like, these are the things that we typically see working best with these age and gender groups.
Yeah. As we talk about demographics here, you know, the demographic for this podcast is probably a little more aimed at those who are a little younger in the industry. And one of the things that I think is interesting about you that you talked about earlier was kind of that jump for you from content creator to content strategist. And, you know, for those that are younger and first getting into the industry, what tips do you have for making that jump where maybe, you know, strategy isn't necessarily in your role now, but that's where you want to go? How do you show that? How do you show that you're capable of jumping into a strategy role when maybe that's not what's in your day-to-day, you know, job description right now?
That is an outstanding question. I think so. I can just speak from personal experience, but without being trained in it, without having gone to school for this, I noticed that I had and I knew it from being a kid, like I said, looking at just sports stats and being fascinated with sports. And I knew that numbers and whether it was batting averages or whatever, I was always kind of into that stuff. And as I started professionally, I gravitated towards, you know, they had me pulling a bunch of numbers, and I would end up spending more time on that than what the task was assigned. And I started really kind of like trying to understand, like, all right, what is, and I remember questions that even at that time, that was a long time ago, but like, why did this thing break out on game day versus this thing? And I really started trying to put almost a behavioral thing on it. Answer your question, I think I got pretty good over time at being able to take data and translate it into human behavior and trying to figure out why these numbers were what they were. And I got better and better over time at communicating why these things worked and why these things didn't. And that really, really, really got challenged when I went to an agency. And now I'm having to talk to, you know, corporations with 35,000 people in them and try to like tell their comms or their marketing people, like, these are the things that you're going to need to do in this space to be good. Because there was, as you can imagine, like, you're dealing with like high-end insurance companies or banks and like that, their day-to-day is not social content. You're looking at what they're doing, and they're like, oh, you know, organic, I remember the conversation, organic reach is dead. No, it's not. Your content's not good. You got to do things that people are interested in. And so having to, I like I said, I was blessed to work at this agency, Taylor, with some of the just people that I, to this day, I still stay in touch with and look at to as advisors and counselors to me on a number of fronts, but really had to get good at communicating those things. Why are these things working? Why are these things not? And be able to put it in business terms. You know, you're being able to understand, like, take a conversation like, you know, oh, is this an engagement play or a reach or a engagement play or a business play? you don't understand. There is no business play if you're not getting in front of anybody. So, and then started talking really, and then I started getting into, you know, like Simon Sinek and a bunch of others. And there's a great guy with the Bulls named Kevin Brilliant, who is, I think, excellent in the space of like really looking at it from a human behavioral standpoint and just trying to get to the point where you're able to talk about this in people terms and in business terms about what impact this content is having. That to me was the path, was really being able to translate to understand the production needs, to understand the content and creative processes and the things that needed to excel to create good content, but then translate it into why is this working with people and how does that impact the business? And that just came with time and experience. And I had a lot of good people along the way that that really impacted my thinking on this.
So, I mean, like what I'm hearing, and I'm asking, you know, almost for you as, you know, a hiring manager, someone in a role of being able to hire, you know, someone who's maybe has content creator on their resume right now, but isn't strategy, you know, analytics, you think that's the first thing they need to understand? You know, if you aren't already seeing the analytics, like you need to ask your bosses, you know, what are the analytics? How are you thinking about this? You know, what would you want to see on a resume, I guess, for someone that right now is a content creator trying to come into a strategy side?
If it was an entry level, somebody early in their career, I'd want to see that they have a passion for creating things that people want to see and watch. That's I think what ends up driving this. I have a passion, not just for shooting, not just for editing, not just for doing graphic design. I have a passion for seeing how people react to my content. That to me is the thing that ends up driving. That's the passion that ends up driving this. It's funny. I was just talking to Morgan Shaw Parker, our CMO, about this, like, how do we make sure that when we're looking at resumes, we're not just looking about people who are passionate about just the content creation? Because if you're creating something that you like, right, that's art. If you're creating something that masses like, that's content. And I want the content creators. I want people who are passionate about how their work translates into the reactions of the audiences. And that, I think, if you can find that, and if you've got people that are really, you know, when basically the work isn't done when they publish something. That's when really the work begins, is I need to stay there. I need to see how people react to this. I think that's when you've got a content strategist. We had a great one on our team named Trevor Lasso, who was he's now with the Washington football team. He was a guy that kept coming into my office and pointing things out. And it was just like, I'm like, okay, we're going to let him go with this a little bit. Cause he had a passion for, you know, not just stopping when the work was done, but really kind of evaluating what he thought was and wasn't working in the content space. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's perfect. I when you mentioned Simon Sinek, I was also thinking, you know, working with people and trying to build a team, trying to build them up and help push them, the 1% better mentality every single day is what came to mind. So I'm glad Garrett tied it all together that way. Is there anything that you do when you hire people or when you're interviewing them to be able to like connect the dots or see how you can how they translate that or how do you get into their emotional psyche, I guess?
So the two biggest things I look for at this point when I'm hiring somebody, because I have complete and total trust in my team to hire the right skill sets. I don't even ask about skills when they come to me, because I know that at that point, whether it's Kyle Benzion or Austin Hiddle or whoever, that they've vetted their abilities. I'm really looking for two main things. And I will get into your question about the psyche specifically, Justin, but the first two things I look for is, does this person, do these people have experience? And this isn't just athletics. This could be in the office. This could be in student groups. Do they have experience with being on a high performing team? And do they know why that team from a high level? Basically meaning that because the team had a similar goal or purpose in mind, and that they all were in it, they were selflessly in it to achieve that purpose. So I want those great teammates. I want to build a team of people who are not just willing, but eager to help each other. That's part one, is the teamwork part. Part two is the passion. Is this, when we put this person in this role, is this something that is really going to make their heart beat faster and make them want to be here to do this job? And we're not going to have to be motivating them over time, but they're going to love doing what we do and love being a part of this team. So those two things are the first two things I look for. Now, if it is something where I need them to be a strategist, I will start drilling in a little bit to talk to me about some successes or failures and tell me why. Get down to the why. Why did this not work? Why? And if they're not able to map it back to people at some point, like it just wasn't interesting, like whatever it is, like if they're not able to tell me in human terms why this thing worked or why it didn't work, it's going to be a struggle.
Is there anything that you want to leave people with?
Well, actually, I'd like to hear, I want to hear from you guys, like, you know, what I'd love to hear, you know, in terms of what you guys have built up, especially Justin, you know, obviously you came into where you've gone from the Bears, right? And what you were doing there to what you're doing now with the Celtics. I'd love to hear as, you know, a head of content production, like, what are your challenges and like, where are you seeing similar things, or are there unique challenges that you're seeing that we haven't even talked about?
It's interesting because, you know, being in Chicago, I've talked a little bit about this, starting on the web and digital side. I know you mentioned this earlier when you were at the Jaguars and then to the Bears, being on the web and digital side and seeing how things have evolved over the course of time has been super interesting to me. And, you know, I've gotten a lot more into the motion graphic space and just seeing how people can make a connection with a graphic just as much as you can make a connection with video, and just finding ways to translate and continue to evolve in the skill set, I think is something that has been interesting to me. And I think my biggest challenge, I guess, is building a team and, you know, trying to take people who have you know, different skill sets and push everybody a little bit more digital and focus on different platforms. But we also have resource constraints. We're a super small team, and I think, you know, it's just growing and evolving, and that's why I've leaned on you a ton, and you know, just from hearing your perspective on how to approach things from our time working together. When I was in Chicago, I can remember posting a video and just being a little bit obsessive compulsive, maybe on checking the website stats, making sure that we were hitting some good numbers there, and, you know, trying to best ourselves year over year, every time we went down to training camp. So,
I would say, Justin, the thing that I remember about you was you were always super passionate too about like doing things the right way, right? You as an intern, and then as an early employee, like you weren't satisfied to just be quiet because, you know, this is the way things were. You were always trying to push the boundaries, which was great. And then the other thing I remember was, like, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but I remember it was either February or June, because it was one of those like kind of low periods. And you and I had sat down and talked, and we decided you were going to take 2 weeks. I asked you to go take 2 weeks. I think it was Cinema 4D at the time. And just go learn it. And I don't think I heard from you again for 2 weeks. And you came back at the end and you were showing me all this stuff. I was like, holy cow. You were clearly spending all of your time on that and came back and just advanced your skill set so much. I was like, wow, that was impressive. So I just remember like the dedication to the craft and the passion to do it the right way, which is, I think, is right. That's 75% of it. You have people that want to be here being great at this every single day. And then the other part of it is, can they work with each other, and can they make each other better? And you get those two things, it's hard to be beat. I think you can overcome a lot of things when you have those two elements.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I think I guess I'm still that way. So it's interesting that you said that. I do have a passion for technology, and I think that's the blending the technology and production towards the audience, as you've mentioned, like just seeing all the different things that people are doing with content and how it's coming down to be accessible for, you know, people who are in small teams, whether that's Unreal Engine coming in and being, you know, it's what they use to build out games, and now it's starting to be used for production. And creating real-time content. But yeah, I love it. I do. I think the the motion graphic stuff. It's funny, in the Slack channel, someone was just asking me about School of Motion courses, and I said I've taken 5, and somebody else commented and said, wow, that's epic. And I was like, I wish I would be at 7 or 8 by now. Like, there's just so much more to learn. And as you dig deeper into the hole, you just keep going, and you're like, oh, well, now I want to learn this and this and this and this. And my wife's like, okay, can you like slow down a little bit here? I mean, there's a life here. And it's like, this isn't like work for me. It's fun. I enjoy it. I mean, I don't watch Netflix a lot. I choose to do this because it's entertaining to me, but it's also challenging. And that's what I love about it.
That's a great point, Justin, right? I think everybody kind of hits that threshold at some point where it's like, you know, the work-life balance thing and versus, you know, but mostly we're people who are very passionate about this space, right? And so it's, I think everybody kind of gets to that point, like, what is the right time investment in this stuff? And when am I doing this because it's work? When am I doing it because it's love? And when do I need to slow down because I've got a family too? And I think I got to a point at Taylor at one point where I was, you know, I'm saying like, yeah, I'm very passionate about what I do. And I got to a point at Taylor where I was spending too much time trying to find solves to certain things. And I kind of had to come to an agreement with my wife that, like, look, I'm going to work longer hours than 9 to 5. That's probably never going to be me, but I'm going to shut it off when I'm home. And if I'm here, I will make that commitment that I'm going to be off of work as much as I can. It may still be in the back of my mind, but I'm not going to be, you know, I don't normally respond to emails late at night or stuff like that, because it's just like, I've got to have that balance somewhere. But it's an interesting, I think everybody gets to that point at some point in their career, like, where am I finding the right lines here? What gets you excited then, Garrett? Like, when you put something out, like, what are you looking at? What gets you excited?
For me, what gets me excited is just telling a really good story. And to your point, I mean, you got to know your why, and ideally really good content drives the views. But that, I mean, to me, it's just because of my role. Like, obviously there are considerations that we work into it on the pre-production and post-production side, as far as, you know, why we're covering this now, you know, the timing of what we're covering, you know, as far as we're going to cover this team this week because our show's coming on after their game or something like there's some of those considerations. But at the end of the day, for me, I just love the ability to go out and tell a really good story and trust that I have, you know, people on our digital side and on our production side that are going to put it in the right places and do the right things with it to make it go, because we do have really talented people in that. So for my role, I really just feel like, you know, as a producer, I kind of take the story and, you know, put it together and think about all the organizational aspects. I really kind of describe my role as a producer, you know, more as a project manager of the story, because we get to hire freelancers. We get to hire, you know, we have full-time editors, you know, I'll shoot a secondary camera, I'll throw together a rough cut, those kind of things. But my role isn't necessarily hands-on as much anymore. So I get to think about how do I best tell this story? That is my job, and I love it. Like, it's just the greatest feeling in the world to have a story in mind and just figure out what are the pieces I need to tell this. And to your point, like, it's human interest stuff that I do. I'm doing kind of documentary human interest type stuff. And that stuff, by just because it grabs emotion, because it grabs feeling, when you do it really well, watching people latch onto that is just like the greatest feeling in the world. You know, you get I remember I did a piece on the Hoiberg family, who's the head coach at Nebraska. His son was playing at Michigan State and playing for him, or playing against him for the first time ever. And after the game, you know, the son pops his head into the dad's press conference room for, you know, the opposing team. And he comes up and sits with him, and his dad just kind of like messes up his hair. And they, you know, afterwards they walk out, and we got this great shot of them, like his arm around him walking, you know, down the hall. And like, that's, and I remember the way that resonated with people, and just like to see those kind of relationships and to see special moments like that resonate with people is what gets me passionate. And I love being able to find those moments that make people love sports and love stories the way that I love sports and love stories. And if I can do that, I know that it will resonate and are other people that are, you know, maybe a little more involved in the where and when and how of the posting and getting it out in the distribution. If I can set them up for success, like, I am thrilled.
That's what you just described, right? I mean, that's what ultimately makes people, that has more power to impact somebody to love a brand or a team, whatever it is, more than any message you can get out. Like those, we've done some of our best kind of those types of human interest stories that have resonated the strongest. The comments, it's unbelievable the stuff that people say. I mean, they're literally telling you, I'm now a Falcons fan, or I now love this player. And matter of fact, we did a great piece on it on one of our players who we just had recently, Ricardo Allen. And my wife to this day is fanatical about Ricardo Allen because of that one video. It's just, it's crazy. So it's amazing the power that content has. And I think it's all our jobs to try and help communicate what kind of power this can have for an organization when we do it the right way.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.